Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who can hear clearly now. The wax has gone. Is Richard Herring. Aren't you lovely? Thank you very much. Oh, you're very lovely. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Tia from the advert for the game Royal Kingdom the other day. This is quite a niche one. I play a lot of Uno on my phone, and an advert keeps coming up for Royal Kingdom. It's based on Royal Match, which gets a lot of adverts if you play games on the internet. I don't know who Tia is, but she seems very confident that you will know who she is. She goes, hi, it's Tia. I don't know who she is. And then, look, I'm an old man. I Googled her. Nothing. The only Tia who comes up is Tia from Sister Sister. I don't think it's her, unless she's had a lot of work done that's made her 20 years younger and change race. It might be, I don't know. But I just love the confidence of her, that she doesn't, she thinks she just needs one name. I hope she is just nobody at all. And just, hi, it's Tia. And my favourite bit is where she goes, no ads, thank God, without sort of realising she's in an ad. I don't know if she realised she's even in an ad. Anyway, she calls it realist, but anyway, whoever she is, if you know who she is, don't tell me. I like the fact that I don't know. I had my ears sucked out. It's been all right. I had a problem, if you've been coming, I've had a problem with one of my ears was blocked. People told me it'd be like a life-changing experience to have this wax in one of my ears, to have it taken out, but I didn't do much. I left and I was still me. So I was somewhat disappointed, but it's quite a cushy job, I think, removing. They just use a sort of ear vacuum cleaner. The lady who did it seemed quite pleased with herself. She showed me what she got out. I didn't keep it. No, it would look disgusting. I didn't even keep my balls. I'm not going to keep mine. I don't know if I've got a book in this. Can I have my earwax back? Stand-up show 2025. I can't work out if it's like a really good job. It's the best job in the world or the worst job in the world. I guess it's the kind of person you are. If you like, I guess what you find, you keep as well. They'll probably find some stuff in there every now and again. That's yours. I don't know. It's hard to work out. We'll find out what our guests think about whether they'd like to. Because you got 50 quid for 5 minutes. Once you've bought that ear vacuum, just sits in. It's got a little room in the back of a house in a little village. Cushy, fine. Here's my topical material. I think this will still be topical one way or the other when this goes out in 3 weeks' time. Whatever happens to Putin, at least he got Brexit done. That is my... it's good to write a cat. I've written about four jokes this year. It's been a good year for me. And I came to London the other day to see the Dopamine Land, which is a sensory experience in South Kensington. You go in to see lights flashing on stuff and mirrors, and there's a ball pit you can go in, and then you can have a pillow fight at the end. It's mostly stuff you could do at home, I have to say. Not spend 100 quid. But I opened a bottle of Coke on the drive down and then left the top not screwed up properly and then left it in the car. It was a very hot day. And when I was really looking forward to drinking my Coke when I got back. But of course, the car had been in the sunshine all day. It was boiling hot. It was like a cup of coffee and it was flat. It was brilliant. I think I've discovered a new flat hot Coke. I think it's the new... You try it, kid. You see if I'm wrong. That's what Tia says at the end of that advert. But I can't tell her if she's wrong because I don't know who she is. So if you're listening to you, I think you just did it for the money, like I do with all the adverts in my show. So, look, we're going to crack straight on. We've got a fantastic, brilliant guest for you this week. She is probably best known as Magica Daspel in DuckTales. Come on, that is properly good. She's in fucking DuckTales. Will you please welcome the incredible Catherine Tate, ladies and gentlemen. It's Catherine Tate. From DuckTales. Hello, come in. Come in, sit down.
Hello.
Lovely to see you.
I'm actually best known as Tia.
Do you? That would make some sense.
That's ruined your night.
She's got like little tattoos. I wonder you could put those on. You can put false things on. How do you feel about, would you like to syringe, but if you weren't an actor...
It wouldn't be that.
Would you like to syringe people's? It's 40 quid a go.
Okay, go on then. No, it's not for me.
It's £5 for the second ear. You get the second ear cheaper. I thought I might. I was only had a problem with one, right. But I thought I'd get both done.
Yes, didn't want to be lopsided.
Yeah, so it was all right.
No, it's not for me. I wouldn't want to get
close if to there was a job squeezing people's spots off their
no,
back.
No. Please,
I think the kind
stop.
Of person who likes that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. If
what
if.
Bodily fluid would you most like to extract?
Nothing.
For a living.
Tears.
No. Tears. You're doing very well with that. How's it being in DuckTales? That must be pretty exciting.
Pretty damn exciting. Yeah, I'll say. Standing in a cubicle on my own with none of the other actors. it's damn good work if you can get it.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
No, it's very very nice to be part of that whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's a slightly solitary experience.
Oh, what's Scrooge McDuck like in real life?
He's feathery.
Well, look, it's lovely to see you, and I've been
and
my goodness, I mean, we met like 30 years ago,
100 years ago,
when you came to see Fist of Fun.
Yes.
Like many the audience of Fist of Fun, you've gone on to have a much more successful comedy career than I've had. But thank you for coming along. And you know, even then, you were acting, and you'd been in a few things. Then I'm looking. That would have been like The Bill mainly.
Yes, probably The Bill. Yes, The Bill.
You were also early on. You were in Surgical Spirit.
Yes, I was. I was a moody teenager in Surgical Spirit.
And Men Behaving Badly. You were in.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
What did you do in Men Behaving Badly?
I think I was I don't know. I think the credit was probably Girl 2 or something like that. But yeah, no, it was. It was obviously it was exciting.
Yeah.
And it was. What was more exciting was that especially when I was in the bill as well, I was still at college.
Yeah.
So I very much felt like, well, I've kind of made it now, you know. And everyone was a bit like, oh my gosh, she's on a TV show. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'm on a TV show. Whereas all I really did was say, he was last seen round the Jasmine Allen estate, you know. He's gone round the back. That was it, you know. Everyone lived on the Jasmine Allen estate in the bill.
Yeah. But you sort of turned to comedy. I think you obviously always wanted to be an actor, but you sort of started doing comedy, and you did stand-up comedy as well, which not... I think this is in the 1990s. You must have started.
I did start in the 1990s.
When it was a very blokey... It was even blokey for me, it was laddie.
Yes, you with your long hair.
Yeah. I had short hair there, but it was quite a macho environment.
It was, but I do think it fast-tracked me.
Yeah.
Because I was... I was at the time genuinely still considered a novelty act.
Right.
You know, because if you had a magician or a juggler on the bill, you could have a woman, but you couldn't have a... No, sorry, if you had a juggler or a magician on the bill, you couldn't have a woman because they were not novelty right. act as well, yeah. you know. It was a very different thing. But because I did approach stand-up in a much more... masculine way, even though I don't think my act was masculine, my mentality was quite masculine.
Sure.
And I did think, and so I relished hecklers.
Yes.
I loved a heckler because I liked that feeling that you can, well, as I say, I like extracting tears. So I liked, I just liked the change in the dynamic in the room, that you can change the dynamic in the room.
Yeah.
To make the heckler the one that everyone's turning on, rather than, you know, the other way. So I used to like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's... And I think it's quite unusual that for, like, someone with an acting background to really sort of throw themselves into stand-up. But it was in a lot... I mean, the acting career carried on going very well, but the stand-up sort of is the thing that...
Oh, the stand-up absolutely propelled me.
Yeah.
But I also think... having come from an acting, well, having trained as an actor and then came out of college and, you know, not being catapulted into the RSC or anything like that, I thought I have to make my own work. And and stand-up was a sense of control I had. And also because, unlike, I guess, other stand-ups at the time who were starting from complete scratch, even though it's a different medium and it's quite scary being up on stage, it wasn't the first time I'd ever been on stage.
No.
So I kind of knew how to move, and I kind of knew... I had that... I guess I sort of had some sense of stage presence, whereas a lot of, you know, a lot of people, your first 50 gigs are really just learning what you do with a microphone and how you feel about being on stage. But I had done that, so I guess it made me a little bit more cocky, which I think helped me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think throughout your career you have been
quite cocky.
You've been quite good. You've taken on quite abrasive and, you know, difficult characters who are, you know, aren't necessarily immediately
likeable. For sure.
And I think that's, you know, that is a good thing to have in stand-up, that confidence and that, especially in the 1990s. I think, you know, I found it terrifying in the 1990s.
Yes.
Doing stand-up. But in the 2000s, it became a bit more inclusive and a bit nicer.
And that's when I got bored with it.
Yeah.
Because I did quite like the sort of the gladiatorial aspects of it. I used to go out every night and go, well, it's either them or it's me.
Yeah.
You know, and I liked it. And I remember, do you remember the Comedy Cafe, Cafe, which and there was one night down the Comedy Cafe that was an Up the Creek and places like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it used to scare me, but I used to love it. And I remember thinking at one point, once down the Comedy Cafe, that the whole place was gonna like go off.
Yeah.
And I remember it was a stand up. I won't say who it is, but he whispered into my ear and he went, I think they're all gonna come after you, but I just want you to know I've got your back.
Yeah, we definitely had a few like that. Did you ever sit in a railway station crying after a gig? Because I did a couple of times.
I have to say, I didn't sit crying, but I did. I remember distinctly the first gig I had that went wrong.
Yeah.
And I had been told very early on that you won't learn anything from your good gigs. You'll learn from your bad gigs.
Yeah.
And I kind of hit the ground running a little bit, and it was just suddenly like alchemy, and oh, it was fine, and I was talking and like talking to the audience, and this stuff that I'd written worked, and then suddenly it didn't. It suddenly didn't, and it was just this crazy thing. You go, what's different? What's different? And I remember standing at Twickenham Station.
Yeah.
I think it was Twickenham. It was a place called the Chicken Shed. Was right. That? Do you remember that?
I don't remember the Chicken Shed, but Twickenham Station's where I remember crying. So
it's just people who live in Twickenham. And I remember just going, oh, I've got to make a different game plan now.
Yeah.
But it was definitely at a train station, and I revamped everything and just thought, this cannot happen again. Of course, it does happen again, but
yeah.
But it just solidified my resolve.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting, and sort of indirectly through the stand-up is what led you to sketch shows, because
I met Lee. I met Lee Mack, yeah.
Yeah, and worked with him quite a lot, but you did a show in Edinburgh that got nominated for the award with him and Dan Antipolsky.
Yeah. No, I met Lee on the stand-up circuit. Yeah. And I've never really forgiven him, because at the time he was kind of like one sort of iteration above when I'd started. You know what I mean? He was already on Gas. Do you remember Gas?
I do.
And he never got me on Gas. But he did once ask me to do the voiceover for Gas, and that was my first. Foray into TV stand-up.
And talking of him, I'll mention him now. That you've done two pilots with him. So you did the pilot for Not Going Out.
I did.
Did you play his wife? And
yes. At the time, not the wife.
The girlfriend.
Yeah.
And you did Everybody Loves Raymond, the UK version, Everyone Loves Raymond,
we
with
did.
Lee.
Yeah, I did.
What went wrong? Why didn't they work out those?
I don't know. Well, Not Going Out was just, it was always a non-broadcastable pilot. And for me, it was, although I, and to be honest, Lee and I still say, we've got to work together. But it was, like, the Everyone Loves Raymond, I don't think that was ever really a thing that they were going to remake. They were just doing this thing called, the BBC were doing a thing called, I think it was called Mixed Doubles.
Right.
And they were just putting together people that the audience had never seen together, but they had a connection.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, they did was say, well, we're going to do a script from Everyone Loves Raymond, let's do that. But I don't think there was ever any talk of, you know, of remaking it, because it's still on Channel 4. Do you know what I mean? And the scripts were exactly the same, except we were just called, you know, we were just,
yeah.
It was set in the north, but the scripts were exactly the same.
Right.
And not going out, and I was only ever going to do a non-broadcastable pilot of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of weird to think of those alternate realities, that's gone on to be
massive,
the seventh longest running sitcom in Britain ever.
Yeah,
I think.
For sure.
So, and you know, maybe come even more so. And when you look at what's been long running, though, it's kind of weird. Last of the Summer Wine, obviously, is the longest running. But there's some Michelangelo. There's a kid show called Mike and Angelo, which is about 13 series. There's really odd things.
Wow.
That these long running things that some of them you kind of go, oh, don't remember that. And some of them are good. So look, the Catherine Tate show. There's a great, if you Google you.
I never do. What are you going to tell me?
The question that comes up, which confused me for a second, was when did Catherine Tate come out? I thought, oh, here we go.
Oh.
But it meant then it's the show.
It meant when did I...
But,
that answer, I don't know then. Yeah. Don't remember that one.
So, but it's nice that's the first question on Google, so I don't know if that's... I don't know if people are all asking the same thing. You can come out now if you want, Catherine.
Oh, that's so cool.
On this, that way, then we got an answer.
Yes.
But the Catherine Tate show came out. You going to you again? You took a solo show to Edinburgh, and then immediately got a TV show, which is
somewhat suspicious.
Not suspicious. It's what everyone dreams of with Edinburgh, but it hardly ever happens.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't know. I think I was the last of the lucky ones in that respect, because I didn't even do, which was just the sort of recognised thing at the time. I didn't even go on BBC Three. You know, I just kind of got a 6-part series on BBC Two.
Yeah.
We didn't do a pilot. We didn't do anything. But I do think it might... I do think this helped. And that was... Normally what you do is... And I'm sure you've done these... I don't even know if they do them anymore, but they used to do these desperately awkward, horribly unatmospheric, deeply unfunny... table reads
yeah.
of scripts that you want to pitch to broadcasters.
Yeah.
And that was what was pitched to me. Let's go and do that. And I said, 100% not. I cannot. These my sketches and these characters, I'm just not going to do them any justice. And I said, hire a theatre. We hired the Shepherd's Bush Theatre.
Right.
Or the production company did Tiger Aspect. I said, hire a theatre, get an audience in, and then invite the commissioners.
Yeah, good idea.
And they commissioned it literally as the metaphorical curtain came down. And at the time, I was heavily pregnant, but I even knew it was still going to be better than doing it sat down.
It's a genius idea, because the problem with those table reads is, you know, if there's four people sitting at the end of the table, even if the other actors are kind of laughing, that's a bit weird.
It's really weird. And it also puts too much pressure on the people making the decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're in this sterile environment. And the whole point about comedy is it's the shared experience. And the more people laughing, the more people are laughing. You know, so that was what we did, even though I did my old lady character 8 months pregnant. No prosthetic, just a thing. But, yeah, I'm a big believer in...
Yeah. And it wasn't, I'd kind of, in my mind, I'd thought, oh, this was an immediate hit, but it wasn't quite, was it?
No, Comrade was a sleeper hit, and the first series kind of went unnoticed.
Yeah.
And it was only, I think, the year after, it had been commissioned straight away, it had been commissioned for a second series, they absolutely got behind it. And then, I don't remember when it came out, I think it might have come out in the February, and then shortly afterwards... I did a comic relief sketch with McFly, and I did this like teenage character, and I was kind of like I can't remember how it really went, but it was McFly were on stage being interviewed live with a load of teenagers, and I was just snuck in.
Right.
And everyone was kind of, you know, asking. Simon Amstel was interviewing, and all these sort of like stooge teenagers were going, oh, what's your... And they go, oh, you can ask McFly a question. Who? And people going, what's your favourite colour? You know, what do you like to eat? And then it got to me and I went, why are you so rubbish? And then suddenly, and then I was like, I'm a bothered and all this.
Yeah.
And that was people at that point, and I remember there was a magazine article, Heat magazine, and they did sort of like this massive double cover thing and went, is this the funniest person in Britain? It was suddenly from there.
Right.
From there, the BBC suddenly put together a like the best of my first series,
yeah.
Put it out. Most people thought it was the first series starting. They literally thought this person from Comic Relief has suddenly got her own series, you know. And then very shortly after that, the second series was out, and it kind of went like, it just picked up.
Yeah. What's interesting, because it was the early 2000s, and a lot of stuff from that time, if we look back at it now...
Hasn't aged well.
We're not allowed to watch it anymore.
We'd be silly to think.
but your stuff doesn't suffer from that at all, I don't think. I think all of those characters... I might be forgetting something, but then I think, but all of those characters still work now. You've toured it quite recently, and it's all still working.
Yeah,
and there's nothing problematic in it, which is quite... I mean, it's a testament to you.
Well, I think there's always problems if you're going to look for them. And do you know what I mean? If you want a there, you'll find a there. But 100%, I don't think any of us were ever out to cause offence.
No.
It's just in the view of where we... It's sort of through the lens of where we are now, it can be sort of misconstrued. And I'm sure I would, you know, I would suffer from that. But I think the laughs are bigger.
You didn't black up, is what I'm saying, though. You didn't black up. There's not. I mean, even like 30 Rock and stuff. There's five episodes of 30 Rock that they don't show anymore.
Right.
And even though within that, the impetus of 30 Rock was, you know, this is bad, or this is the joke is something around this. You know, that's become a bit of a blanket. Let's take anything out that's like that, rather than look at the subtleties of what they were trying to say. Because I think they were, you know, I think 30 Rock was a pretty decent show as well.
Yeah.
But that's all kind of interesting. And, you know, I'd sort of, I'm not quite forgotten how big these characters became, but Lauren, you know, you ended up doing a sketch with Tony Blair, which is absolutely insane.
Finest comic actor of his generation.
Yeah. War criminal. actor. I can't talk.
Often go hand in hand.
I've done a sketch with Nigel Farage. So
then,
but
not you.
I didn't really want to do it, but I was on This Week, and you know they do a stupid sketch at the beginning, so I didn't have to talk to him.
Right.
I was. But in the
friendly
sketch, Nigel Farage has asked me something. So I'm the most ashamed of any person. How was it? How was did Tony know the character for real, or was this?
No, I don't think he. And one would hope he didn't, because he'd have been spending far too much time in front of TV if he did. But he kind of knew it. He obviously knew it was popular, and he knew it was the right thing to do. And yes. I think it was. I think it was in no small reason that he was on his way out of government rather than joining government. I think it's a nice parting shot for someone, I guess. And but he was, you know, I have to say he was all in, and that's great.
Yeah.
Because we'd been told, you know, you can only have half an hour, and it's like, well, we're not going to be able to set up the cameras in half an hour. You know what I mean? And let alone do reverses. And anyway, he was he just went, no, they can take the time. We need to get this right. And there was a point where we all kind of like went, oh my goodness. And it was obviously the point of the sketch was that we reverse it, and he says to me, am I bothered, rather than me saying it to him. And when we started, he got the intonation wrong, and everyone was just like looking and going, this is not going to work. Because he was saying, I did this long, you know, blah 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 blah, and he goes, Lauren, and then he went, am I bothered? Right? And we were all like, am I bothered? And anyway, and he has very great instincts, because he said to me, I'm not doing it right, am I? And I said, it's just a slightly different, you know, intonation, and unless you do it right, it won't be funny. You know? And to be fair to him, he said, tell me how to do it.
Sure.
And I did. And I think he won Best Newcomer that year at the British Comedy Awards.
And how much is the catchphrase? When you have a success, and it's such a successful catchphrase, not only did it capture the public imagination, it's in the OED, you were the word of the year, BOVVERD.
Yes.
So absolutely incredibly popular. Do people still say it to you on a daily basis?
Yes. I'm delighted to say. Yes, I can't believe it. 100%. I suppose it's also when my show came out, you either had to watch it, which I guess young people don't quite understand right now. You either had to watch it on the TV or record it or get the DVD or wait for them to repeat it. Whereas now, obviously, not only is everything available all the time at any time you want it, everything's on YouTube anyway. So I get these, like, children, you know, come up to me and know the characters, because I guess they're shareable. You know, little bite-sized sketches are shareable. And then the scary thing is you get, like, grown-ass people say, oh, I grew up with you. And it's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? How can you possibly have... Oh, my God, yeah, you know. I would never... ever be so churlish as to be annoyed when someone
has it never been at the worst possible time or the wrong occasion?
Well, actually, I recently met. Oh, actually, no, it's so convoluted. I won't. It wasn't. Basically, the nub of it is, it was someone that I just met, and I hadn't made any. They didn't know me from TV or anything like that. But I just met them, and then someone walked past. And no, and we'd been together. We'd been talking for a little while, and then someone walked past with a pram and went, "Catherine Tate, I fucking love you," right? And then this person went, "Do you know them?" And I said, no, I don't. And then she just walked away with that thing. She went, "I fucking love Nan." And she said, "Does she know your Nan?" And I was like, no. But it was not quite the catchphrase, but it was just sort of slightly being recognised at an inopportune time.
It's a fantastic character that comes out of meeting a real life person. That was you were doing that a little bit in your act, but just as a...
I was just doing it as a voice.
Yeah,
I was doing that as a voice. I'd found a way of, concocting a story about my nan and using that voice that had actually come from a an old lady that I'd met at an old people's home when we'd been sent round there when I was at drama school to give them a trip down memory lane. And then when I did my first solo show in Edinburgh, I only did a handful of characters, but that was just one that felt like I should probably flesh out a bit. You know, yeah. I mean, I didn't really give it too much thought, to be honest. But
it's very. I watched you on the Graham Norton show where you're telling Tom Cruise about. Yes. Which is, again, that must be such a weird thing, do you? Tom Cruise, you're trying to explain to Tom Cruise.
Absolutely bizarre. You are. Absolutely bizarre. And then this is. So true. I was in a restaurant around the corner last week and Tom Cruise walked in.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, why would he ever remember? But you know, when you do that thing and you go, you sort of play with yourself and go, come on, just go. How awkward would it be if I just waded up to him and went, Tom, do you remember it's me? And I do that voice. Tom, you remember it's me? You know what I mean? And I was like relishing how much I was making myself full of shame, you know?
Yeah.
But to be on the sofa with Tom Cruise doing silly voices.
But what's interesting, he'd never seen the character, and like you just did like a snippet of the voice, and he immediately got it.
Yes,
and that's why it's such a, you know, it's that skill of observing and seeing where something's going to sprout from, and obviously those come along not every day for anyone, but it's terrific when you. Spot it, and someone else might not have spotted. And you know, you were divided into different groups in your drama thing, so you could have easily gone to one of the other groups.
Completely, and also it kind of comes back to that thing of not wanting to do a table read at the BBC or send in the scripts, because what they're going to do is go, "Oh right, it's an old lady character, is it?" Do you know what I mean? At the time, and you're 28 or whatever, you know, I could imagine they'll go, you know, me coming in going, hello, yeah. I'm an old lady, you know, that's why it's fun. And it's like, no,
that's,
it's
that's
not
a pretty
that.
Good guess.
So that's my next one. That's my next one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And what was it like? I mean, more than Tony Blair and a more bigger criminal than Tony Blair working with Noel Edmonds on that sketch. The Deal or No Deal sketch, and was he horrible backstage? And tell me everything about
him. He wasn't horrible. Is he supposed to be horrible?
Don't know.
Being awful. He wasn't. And you know what the great thing about that was? There was no script.
Right.
Because I said, there's no point in doing a script. Play the game.
Yeah.
Just play the game. And we filled it with people. And played the game as if it was just as if she was playing the game, the old, you know, the Nan character. And he just went with it. You know, there's no point in giving you lines and auto cues. Act exactly the way you would if this woman was coming on and trying to disrupt things.
Yeah.
And he did, and it was brilliant. And he understood, you know, obviously. that was the way to go, and it was great fun. Aww.
But tell me later what he was really like. Let me ask you some emergency questions before I forget to do any at all. Have you ever seen a ghost, Catherine Tate, if that is your real name?
Have I ever seen a ghost? No.
No?
I've seen a ghost.
I thought you'd have seen a ghost.
Really?
So, yeah, it's just my way of finding out if someone's mentally ill or not. I just thought you would have done.
Yeah.
So
it's
now
disappointing.
I'm disappointed to find out you are sane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. That's good news. Let me ask you another question then. If you had to choose between going on a date with... I haven't asked this one recently.
No, but... look, there's people there and I've got the backs of my head. The backs of my head. I said that as if I had two heads.
Let me make sure I get this one right.
Why didn't you go... There's two seats there, look. Are you all right? Right at the end,
they
missus.
They love getting
right
their
the
seat
end?
And they stay where they...
Oh, do you know, they want a better view of you.
Yeah, they love looking
That's
at
That's what
so,
it
yeah.
is. Yes, and he's like, oh, yeah, his ears are clean.
There's some white stains on my trousers, but that's because I was putting sun cream on my kids earlier on, and it wipes.
He
I became
told me
sexually excited by it, and I spunked on myself. No, I'll... if you had
That's
to
what
on...
Noel Edmonds said.
If you had to choose between going on a date with a man who was a 6-foot-tall penis... I haven't asked this question for ages, but it's just come together in a compilation and I really liked it. Or, and he's like, he's just a penis, he wears a pretend arms and stuff, but he's just a penis. He's got a face on his helmet and he slithers around like a slug. But he's 6-foot-tall, so that's most women, that's what they want in a man. Or a man who, instead of having a penis, had a tiny man there in his... that is a living man, which... Don't look at me as if this is a weird question. Which would you choose out of those two?
I'm only looking at you weirdly as if it's quite obvious which one you choose.
Which one would you like?
Tiny man for a penis.
Okay. Why is that? He's 6 foot, the guy.
Yeah, but he's just a penis.
Yeah. Don't judge him.
What does he use for a penis?
He is a penis. He doesn't need a penis. I don't know how he reproduces.
So he can't... Well, that's what I'm saying. I can't.
He probably just comes at the top of his head. It's probably like a fish or something.
Right,
so the lady penis will lay its eggs in the sea and he spunks on it.
So there's no future in it for me at all. There's no future in this relationship.
Well,
if
just,
I've
it's
got
a
to
date. Be... I'm just saying a date. I'm not saying you have to marry him.
Don't waste my time like that.
Okay.
Whereas if it's a man with another man,
yeah,
I understand that.
Okay, that's good.
Ish.
Isn't it? So you know, you can have.
There's
a
ghost behind you.
I believe you. Right, one more. Sorry to ask such a silly question. I will never do that again. Do you secretly wonder if you are the new Jesus?
No.
Never. Not when you were a kid.
If I ever knew him,
if you are the new
Jesus. Oh, if I am Jesus.
If you're Jesus.
I thought you said, did I secretly wonder if I've ever met Jesus?
Have you ever wondered if you are the new Jesus?
I absolutely know I'm not.
No. How do you know that?
I'm the old one.
Okay, good. I used to think I might be one of the new Jesus' disciples. I thought he might call on me to know, follow him around.
Yes.
Chip him with his wisdom.
Yes.
Help him out a bit, you know. All right, let's move on. We'll move on to Doctor Who, which, I thought there might be a few fans amongst my fans of Doctor Who. There's some new ones. Are you allowed to talk about the new ones? There's some new ones coming up.
I not only can I not talk about them, I can't even confirm if I'm in them, and I think the trailers have already been out.
Yeah. So there's three of them. There's some three new ones.
There's three new...
Which you may or may not be in.
Yes, no.
With David Tennant.
There's three one-hour specials.
Yeah.
I think they come out in November.
It's quite interesting that you were only meant to be in one episode originally, right? You were only meant to be in the Christmas episode originally.
Yeah.
When you first saw on it.
Yeah.
And then did they always plan to bring you back, or did they just love you so much?
You've got
a very good rapport with David,
yes.
Right? In which you've worked with him on several things.
Yes, but we hadn't at the
not
time. No, not before. We didn't even know each other. But it was just, there was just a very easy rapport on set and on camera, I guess, and it just worked very well with the kind of relationship Russell had drawn between these two characters. But no, there was that was it. You know, I said thank you very much. I had a lovely time, and that was it. There was no plan at the time. And then quite a while later, I think it just planted a seed in Russell's head, and I think they, as I understand it, they didn't really expect me to say yes.
Right.
But just thought, oh, we might as well ask. And then surprising for me, I don't know that I expected to say yes.
Yeah.
Because I didn't expect the question to be coming. So it's never in my mind, would I ever go back and do Doctor Who? Because I just never thought that would be an option. And then I went out for what I thought was just a lunch to go, oh, hi, do you remember when we did that? And it kind of like dropped the bombshell on me and said, we'd love you to come back to be the full-time companion. And I really do remember, like, hearing, you know, that expression, like your jaw hits the floor. And I remember just properly not being able to know what to do with my face. It was, and I realised, oh gosh, I guess I really do want to do this.
Cool. And you weren't a big fan of the show?
No, full disclosure, I'm not.
Are you a fan now?
It's not that I'm not a fan. It's that I don't say I'm not a fan. That sounds horribly disingenuous.
Do you find it a childish and stupid show? That only if an adult's watching it, they should have a real good look at themselves. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say I don't understand it.
Okay.
It's probably not childish enough for me. I feel that my comprehension is a bit too lowbrow for sci-fi.
Right.
It just baffles me.
Yeah, I think Doctor Who's quite a complicated show, but it's increasingly got complicated. I think I'm quite interested to see. I haven't really watched it recently because I got too confused by
it. Right.
But I'm interested to see you guys come back if that ever were to happen.
This is how much I watch it. I had no idea they even carried on when David and I left. That was a game little choice, wasn't it? No. I'm joking, of course, but it's the most fantastic show to be part of.
Sure.
It's the most exciting thing. It's probably one of the most joyous jobs I've ever had. I genuinely love David. I love Russell. I love Julie and Jane and Phil who make the show. And obviously lots of new people now. But I can't say I could let you know what was going on.
No, okay.
I just don't. And of course, you know, fans want to ask you, and I feel like I really disappoint them all the time, especially in America, where, and you know, in conventions, and you do panels and Q&As, and they're desperate to know what the hidden meaning was in episode 3, line 6. And I'm like, oh, I couldn't tell you, love. I'm sorry, I just don't know. And yet I love playing the character and I invest in the character, but I feel like she's like me. She is of the earth.
Yeah.
She's of the earth, which I think is what... That's what I say anyway. When I say, she doesn't know what these things are.
She doesn't know what's happening.
No.
I did like a tiny bit in an audio adventure only.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so you get to go to, you know, signings and things, and the fans of Doctor Who are extraordinary, I think, because they love something without any self-consciousness, and I absolutely admire it. I wish I had that level of being able to just go, this is what I like, and I don't care
right.
what anyone thinks.
You feel judged. You'd feel judged.
I would feel judged if I was, you know, yes. if I love something that much. So I think I genuinely think they're some of the best people in the world, but they're weirdos though.
Well, they certainly are the most loyal and lovely people.
They are. They're fantastic. And then you get to be in the office as well.
Yes.
I mean, and that's quite a tricky... Again, that was a gig where you just did one
yes.
and then came back and did loads.
Yes, yes.
Although I read, I don't know if this is true, that they were... That you were sort of you were the person they wanted to replace Steve Carell, but that you were doing touring a play and were unable to.
I was doing Much Too About Nothing in the West End with David Tennant.
David Tennant, but then they still got you back to do more. It's got to be a little bit difficult to step into a world
crazy, yes.
famous, you know,
yes, for
sitcom for the sort of the last couple of series.
Yeah,
but it's also got to be pretty cool.
It was just one of those things that I kind of thought. I mean, yes, it's a ridiculous thing to join anything, let alone to join something even sort of floating around the idea that it was the same kind of role that Steve Carell would play in, you know, not role, but you know what I mean, the same device that he played in the show. That's a crazy thing to do, but the opportunity was sort of too big to turn up and to turn down, rather. And it's very much that thing of, certainly as an actor or even as a stand-up, the whole thing about going to LA is it's really difficult to go until you're invited. Yeah. So I knew at least I wasn't going to have that experience of jostling around trying to get a gig on a pilot. You know, yeah. I had a reason to go, and it was a big reason, and it was a good reason, and it turned out to be just a fantastic, just a fantastic time.
Yeah, I mean, we've watched it the whole thing.
Many times. So
I think everyone, and thinking through lockdown, everyone watched The Office again.
I guess so. and people kind of watch it on a loop, like it's a comfort thing.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary. And certainly in America, I think, even though, when I go to conventions and stuff, I'm there mainly for Doctor Who, and the fan base is big in raw numbers. But The Office, it seems just everyone in America knows what The Office is.
Yeah.
And so it's the thing I'm most recognised for. Right. Yeah, but again, not a particularly warm or inviting character.
No.
And I've countless times I've been to places where people go, oh my God, you're Nelly. I hate your character. I hate you. But you're good. You know, but it's just this thing people go, I hate, you know, because she was abrasive and, annoying.
But that is where you go, isn't it? It is the area that you return to,
I guess. Yeah,
not everything's been that, but there's a lot of characters that are difficult to like, but then I think in the most successful ones, you do absolutely love them, though, despite their being. I mean, Nan, you love because she's so honest, there's an honesty behind all of them, I suppose, and that's what rudeness is.
I think that is, and it's also what rudeness is for comedy very useful because it's often funny.
Yeah,
and so I've never thought of any of my characters. I don't need people to like them. I need to find a reason to laugh, and that's the way in. But of course, when you play a character, even if they're not, they're not immediately, amiable people, I've got to find a reason to love them.
Yeah.
So I've got to inhabit them a little bit more than just swearing.
Yes.
Otherwise it would be just swearing.
Yeah. That's what I think. What's so interesting about you is that you've got the background in comedy, you've got the background in acting, so that when you're doing a comedy character, it's properly, it's properly put together.
Yeah.
Some people would do, and sometimes characters are fun if they are just two-dimensional.
Sure.
But there is more to these characters because I think because you're acting training and because you're thinking of it in that way. It's an interesting combination because mostly actors are either, people are either good at acting or they're good at comedy.
Yeah.
And they're finding someone who can do both really well is quite rare, I think.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Whitehouse is fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant.
But there aren't many people I can think, if you start to name one, you go like, he can be ridiculously funny.
Yes.
But also he can do the acting chops.
Yeah, for sure.
So it is interesting. You've had so much, so many things to explore, and you've done so many different things. That's what I obviously have followed your career, and I know you. But even going over this today, I was thinking, my God, you've done so much stuff. It's really impressive and incredible. And more importantly, you were the UK jury's spokesperson in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Indeed, I was.
That must have been the hardest character to play.
That was a hard one because I couldn't be mean.
That's hated by everyone in Europe. how was it when you got asked to do that?
It was such a mad thing to do. I just couldn't say no to it. And especially because we were hosting.
Yeah.
And, I was going to be live in the arena. It's not like, they just cut to me in a studio down the barrel of a lens saying, douze point. It was electric. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't have to do any of the heavy lifting. I just popped up and, you know, did the old iconic douze prawn. Loved it. It was mad. It was, again, it was just like, I couldn't turn that down.
Yeah.
No, it was too fun.
You absolutely cannot turn it down. So a couple more recent things. I mean, I was reading in Digital Spy. You did a Netflix show called Hard Sell.
I did.
Which has got cancelled by Netflix, but they didn't tell you it got cancelled.
Didn't tell. Well, here's what happened. They had a change of staff.
Yes.
And as
I'm very aware of those.
As happens when someone who has commissioned the show then leaves, often they don't like, you know, they want to start afresh. And I kind of understand, but it would have been nice for them to have told
it's
me.
Not being told. I mean, I haven't yet been told if there's another series this morning with Richard, not Judy. So,
well, it's not a no then, is it?
Fingers crossed. Though I got a clue Jane Root took over at the BBC and I got a clue because I went to Edinburgh that year and I was meant to be writing something with Steve Coogan and I met him at a party. And he was talking to Jane Root and Steve said, "Have you met Richard Herring?" And Jane Root just turned her back on me. So I thought, we're probably not getting another series, but I'm still waiting.
Yeah, still not waiting. A definitive no.
Because, you know, it could make it Holly and Phil now, couldn't we, this morning with Holly? I can work. I'm just saying, if anyone's listening from the BBC, it's only been 22 years. Sorry, 23 years. And I've been watching. I've watched the whole of Queen of Oz over the weekend, which is your new sitcom for the BBC.
Yes.
Again, another horrible character.
Yes, but light and shade.
There is light and shade. It's an interesting when this was someone else's idea that you've taken on right with your husband, but they wanted to say it's basically obviously quite heavily influenced by maybe another red-haired royal.
It really isn't, though. It really isn't. It isn't, because when I'm doing a new show, and it's called The Queen of Oz, and the premise is a fictitious version of the royal family gets sent over to Australia to become their queen because she's a PR disaster here. But this show first came in front of me before lockdown, right? And it was pitched to me as Queen of Canada.
Yeah.
And all he said, this producer, was, he said, you know, I think he'd be good in the part. And I said, oh, I really liked the idea. I loved the idea, because immediately where I went was like a cross between, you know, Veep, in the sense that someone's terribly unlikable, is surrounded by a lot of, you know, ineffectual people, but is in a position of responsibility and authority. But this was mixed with, you know, this, instead of being political, this was kind of royal, mm-hmm. you know, so you had that. I don't even think Meghan and Harry were together at the time. So, and you know, this was, and we wrote it, and then it you know, it got put on hold because of COVID, obviously. Then Netflix had been commissioned as well, so I had to do that. And then, so then 2 years later, we're doing this show, you know, and the Queen died, and I just assumed, oh well, we're absolutely not doing it then, because there is absolutely nothing in this show that is in any way linked or inspired by the real royal family. There genuinely isn't. There is a show called The Windsors that already exists, sure. and The Crown. So I wouldn't, you know, I didn't. There would be no need to, and it's much better to start from scratch and have, you know, your imagination. But yes. Harry and I do share the same hair colour. We also wear shoes, so yeah, I guess you
there
found
goes
me
another
out.
Reason. There's another one.
Yeah, you
There's
found me
another
out.
One.
But no, it really isn't.
I think it's interesting to move it to Australia. I mean, I think that's your idea.
My idea, because, well, again, much like this morning with Richard, not Judy, we went to pitch it to Canada.
Yeah.
And they said to us, it won't be it will be a quick no, right. and a slow yes. Now, 3 years and counting, maybe they still want it.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I said, you know, I think this, because I'd just come back from doing a tour of Australia and New Zealand, and I said, you know what, I think this would be a better concept in Australia, partly because also Queen of Oz sounds like a better title than Queen of Canada.
It does, but I think also the idea of
being shipped off.
Well, but also installing a monarch in Australia is so against what Australia would want.
100%.
Whereas I think Canada might go for
it. They might just be... well, or they'll just be too polite to say no, yeah. You know. No, 100%. And that's part of the joy of the show is, you know, it's fish out of water. It's someone being somewhere they don't want to be. Yeah. And Australia doesn't want her either. So it's kind of like... you have to sort of look at it that when we were writing it is that Australia becomes a bit of a character in its own right, almost like a rom-com, but it's the show, you know, it's the country that they first don't like each other and then they begin to sort of soften towards each other.
Yeah, and I think it's, out of all the characters, I think it's the hardest one to make likable because she's super rich and a member of the royal family.
Of course, she's
and
entitled. People, yeah,
people don't like rich people, as we found out from the news recently as well. But you know, it's it is hard to make that sympathetic. But I think again, it does. You do if you watch the whole arc of the whole series.
Yes,
it's you know, things do change. And
things do change. Yeah.
Not entirely though.
No, because
the end's quite bleak. I have to say.
Sure, sure, but it's. For me, it's much better than learning a lesson and her suddenly... Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's boring. I don't want people to change. It's
They can't... With a sitcom, they can't really... You know, right at the end, they can maybe, but you can't... Yeah. It has to stay the same.
Yeah, they've got to stay true. But again, with the story arc, you've still got to give people places to go and new things to uncover.
Yeah. Well, it's good. People should check it out on the BBC iPlayer. You can watch the whole thing. Straight off, which is great. What's coming? Is there anything else coming? You seem to be so busy. So, do we know if you're going to do more of these, or is that still up in the air?
That's up in the air. I don't know. I would, you know, it would be nice to. And I'm gonna do a play. I think
nice. Yeah, yes. Because we haven't really talked about it, but you have done a lot of theatre.
Trod the boards a bit.
Yeah. Is that what you like? Best
I do like
everything.
It. I think, yeah, not that I'd ever want to have to choose between anything, because I think it's lovely to have the opportunity to do different types of thing. But I would say live stuff is always going to be the thing I would choose, whether or not it was my own stuff or theatre, you know, a play or anything. But I just do love being...
And with the, it is such an unusual thing to be like doing Shakespeare and then taking your own show around the world. There was a long gap between the TV series and the tour when you finally toured.
There was, yeah. I don't know why I didn't do it earlier. I really don't know why I didn't do it. I should have done.
Yeah,
but I've made a lot more money.
Well, was the audience still there for it? It's 15 years on us.
Yeah.
And they still,
it was entirely new material though,
course,
as well.
Yeah.
But the characters were all the same. And I was amazed and delighted.
Yeah, and you were working with Brett. Brett Goldstein work on that tour as well?
Yeah, he was in the show.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And you did Super Bob, which was a trip.
Super Bob, yes, yes, yes.
And he's gone on to do okay.
Yes, he has. So,
I think out of everyone, he's one of the... I mean, maybe you know that he isn't, but he seems like the nicest
he's
person.
He's the Noel Edmonds of our generation.
I hope something terrible comes out about him because he's too... I feel too happy for him. And
no,
I don't like to feel happy for someone being successful.
Oh, he's
but,
lovely.
But he's done fantastic. He's obviously Roy Kent in Ted Lasso. But yeah, so it's you know, you're very good at picking people to work with as well. And
yes.
Yeah. Because you do. I'm interested in your writing process because you do work with other people always, nearly always.
Nearly always.
Yeah.
I like to, because as you know, writing is lonely, you know, and it's arduous, but I do love it.
Yeah.
But I would say I'm better in a room of people. Yeah, as long as I get the final say.
I can't work out how what's the right word for this? Probably not the time to start saying the wrong word at this stage. Mm. I can't work out how if people are working with you, is it very much like this is my thing and we'll do what I want and thanks for the idea? Or are you? I mean, I feel like you probably are a team player, but I won't because things are so centred around you.
Yes, of course. And Well, I'm sure, I guess it's how you interpret it, isn't it? It's, I think it's better to be direct.
Yeah.
And also, I have an ownership over most of the things I'm writing.
Yeah.
And have been doing those things, playing those characters, so I feel I know them perhaps a bit better than,
yeah,
than, you know, like, for example, when Brett and I started working together, I'd been doing the show, and I remember when I said to him, do you want to come and do some Nan specials with me? And he went, I do, but I don't want to be the person who breaks Nan or kills Nan or whatever. Yeah. And I said, it's okay, because I won't let you. I will know how to not make that happen.
Sure.
And so, but I would only work with people who obviously who have the same kind of,
yeah,
sense of comedy and are nice people. And Brett is amazing, and you know, Nikki Wardley and Alex that I wrote Hard Sell with, they're all just amazing people. But obviously someone has to steer the ship.
Yeah.
But no, I wouldn't ever want to be that person that says, no, it's got to be like this or not. The only time I would ever is when I instinctively feel something's not right.
Sure. And I think it's an interesting thing when you look at Partridge, and there's been various writers, and he's always been very good at choosing the right writers, but it's given it new life,
yeah,
every time.
Yes.
And makes that character, which, you know, I think we always had he was going to grow into, yes, that character as he got, yes, the right age for it.
Yes.
Maybe,
yeah,
for Nan, when you're the right age for Nan.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Oh,
there's a long life on that.
The plan. Oh, for 100%. Yeah. The plan is, you know, I'm gonna inch towards the place where I need prosthetic to play Lauren Cooper and no prosthetic to play Nan. No, it'd be going the other way.
I was going to talk to you. I don't know if there isn't really time to cover this properly, but you had OCD as a teenager. Is that something that's still...
I don't know if I really had OCD. I think that was probably me trying to make myself sound very interesting and dramatic. But I guess I've got a slightly... I mean, it's not as bad as it was. But yeah, I used to do... Yeah, for sure. I used to do a thing where if there was... like, for example, if that was on the floor, I wouldn't be able to keep it on the floor because book begins with B, and for example, Brett begins with B, and that means, oh God, somewhere Brett's on the floor, you know. Right. I mean, it's madness.
Yeah.
It's my idea. It's my version of a ghost.
And you didn't see a ghost while that book, yeah, was on the floor. Okay.
No, and just things, yeah, I did, and there was a little of those self-imposed rituals, like, you know, you've got to do that three times and then you'll pass your French exam, which of course it doesn't really work like that.
No,
just got to gen up on the verbs.
It is, I mean, it's a teenage thing, I think, that most people go through to some degree. But it is interesting that a lot of, I mean, again, it's become almost like a cliche amongst comedians to have a thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's not something that you feel is...
No, although I do very much do a thing every time I go on stage. I do a little ritual. Probably that came from seeing the Madonna video, you know. I think I do a slightly more domestic version of that. But
what do you do?
Just a small thing is that I have to look everyone in the eye.
Yeah.
Because rather than saying, you know, the words...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Start with G
it?
And ends with L.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense to do that.
I just do that to have a connection with people.
Cool. Well, look, it's really, I was really lovely to catch up with everything you've been doing for me. One of the nice things about this this show is just I spend Mondays just watching loads of fantastic comedy. So thank you for that, and it's really great to see you again. I haven't seen you for a long
time.
Thank
you very much.
So good luck with everything that's coming
thank
up.
Thank you.
And do watch Queen of Oz and all the other stuff as well.
Thank you very much.
There.
Thank
ladies
you.
And gentlemen, the amazing Catherine Tate.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Catherine Tate. Scant regard, provide the music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you to Chris Evans, not that one, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. Also, thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. They're nice as well. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.